So when it comes to like even when people criticize people for having weight loss surgery or for using GLP-1s, I tell people like, would you tell someone that's addicted to drugs, like if they're using crack, do you tell someone, oh, just try having a little bit less crack? No, you tell them to go to
No, you don't.
rehab. You tell them to separate themselves from the substance that they're addicted to. But if you're addicted to food, you cannot separate yourself from food because you literally
Nope.
need food to live. And that's what pisses me off so much about people when they just don't understand, like, there's obesity is such a complex disease.
It's Mel. Before we dive in, just a quick note. This podcast is for educational and informational purposes only. The insights shared by our guests are not a substitute for medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always consult with your healthcare provider before making changes to your diet, exercise, or lifestyle. Now, let's get to the show.
Welcome back to our Sleep Life podcast. And today I have a special guest. You guys know her for sure. And if you don't, then you've been living under a rock and you're going to have to go find her and go follow her. She has been with me for a very long time. I love her to death. We get a patient story today. So welcome on, Anna Banana. How are you today?
I'm doing fabulous today, actually. Thank you for asking.
And yes, I'm so excited to have you because I know you as a friend, but I don't know your whole story. And I don't think the Instagrammers or TikTokers know your whole story either. And I'm really excited to get like, where did it all start? So like for you, when did you know one that you had like a weight issue? And when did you feel like it was time to like nip that in the butt?
So my whole life, like most people, most of us, I struggled with my weight my whole life. As a kid, I was always chubby. Like, I always enjoyed eating. And having Portuguese parents, like, I never went to McDonald's until I was like an adult, you know? So it's like, it was just even just re eating regular food. Like, I just always had a problem, I guess you can say, of like knowing when to stop. I always just had like a big appetite. But then in high school, I became really active. I played soccer on the team for high school. So it's like, I was like, you know, exercising a lot, like losing weight. But then in college, as happens with a lot of people, like once you start like going on dates with people or you get into a relationship, like the weight just kind of packs on. So I
It
remember
does.
when I first met my now husband, my freshman year of college, like whenever we'd go on a date, I was like very mindful with what I ate. And then with time, I was just like, whatever. Like I'm just gonna eat what I'm in the mood to eat for. And over time, it just piled on. When I was in graduate school, like I really started to pack on the weight. And I've always been healthy, so I always avoided going to the doctor. But when I went for a checkup, they checked my thyroid and they saw I had hypothyroidism. And pretty much all the symptoms I was feeling like correlated with my thyroid issue. Like my weight just kept going up. Like I just like felt like shit. Like just like physically, like I had no energy. Like all these things that are caused by the thyroid. I just assumed it was like, okay, I'm in grad school full time. I'm working full time. Like I'm just like drinking like Starbucks Frappuccinos, trying to stay up all night, like doing homework, you know? So it's like I just attributed that to everything. And yes, that obviously didn't help the situation, but my thyroid obviously made things worse. And I also, with time, figured out I also had PCOS. So I definitely had a lot of medical things that were not helping me. But that combined with like just life stress, being an emotional eater, it just like kept going up and up. And then my senior year of college, something super unexpected happened. My dad tried to kill himself. And that was really heavy for me emotionally. I've always been like super close with my dad. My dad, like having a very strict immigrant mom, like my dad was always, even though they're both immigrants, my dad was always the one to kind of help advocate for me to be able to do things. Like it was to the point, like my mom didn't even want to let me go to Six Flags because she thought if I went to Six Flags, I was going to like die. Because, you know, as if people die on roller coasters all the time, right? My mom is just like, she's such a like anxious,
She's nervous.
yes, she's such a like anxious, paranoid person. So my dad has always been the person to be like, oh, if you get straight A's again this marking period, like, you can do this, you know? So he's always kind of found a way to do that for me. So again, so we've always been really close. And I was in school for psychology, and I saw certain signs, and I was, like, kind of thinking, like, okay, like, my dad's definitely not okay. But he saw a psychiatrist, and the psychiatrist cleared him to come home, and he was like, okay, I'm going to put you on medical leave for a bit for your depression so you can get better. And then, like, the very next day, he tried to kill himself. And
oh, shit.
Yeah, that was really rough for my family. And as an only child, I've always been, like, the glue of the family.
Yeah.
So That was really hard for me because, again, I'm working, I'm in school, my mom doesn't drive, like, my dad got hospitalized psychiatrically, so then I would have to, like, rush, like, go pick her up so we could go visit my dad, and I just turned to food just to, like, help cope with everything, and that definitely did not help my situation at all with my weight.
No.
But even after that, like, in grad school, again, it, like, kind of went up and down, up and down.
Did he get better?
Yeah. So my dad, he ended up getting hospitalized a total of 3 times. But he did, now he's, like, mentally, he's fine. Like, he's like himself again, but for a long time. Good. And with him, it all stemmed from work stress. He couldn't sleep. So, guys, sleep is so important. He could not sleep. He kept going to the doctor and saying, like, hey, can you please switch my medications? Like, they're not working. And if you know anything about psych meds, like, you're not just supposed to start something and stop. And for some reason, the psychiatrist just kept, like, starting him and stopping him on different things. So he, like, lost his mind, right?
Yeah.
And so.
Oh, my God.
Within, like, 2 weeks, like, I saw such a decompensation in my dad. Because, again, like, literally, like, not going to sleep will literally drive you insane. Like, you will not know what you're doing. And so it got to the point where my dad, in his irrational thoughts in that moment, he thought, I'm never going to get better. The best thing for my family so that we don't go into, like, financial chaos. Because in his mind, he's like, oh, my God. I'm going to have to go to the hospital. My family is going to be stuck with all these bills. In his mind, he thought, if I end my life, that is going to help my family financially. And, like, again, I know he was not in the right state of mind, and that's why he made that choice. And thank God, like, my mom found him at home in time and was able to rush him to the hospital, and he's still with us today. But, yeah, that was really rough for my family, like, seeing my dad like that, someone that I have always viewed as being so, like, emotionally strong because he was a breadwinner of my family. Like, to see him like that was rough.
I would imagine really, because something that people don't know is my dad did the same thing, but only one time. And yeah, the neighbor found my dad. He just took a bunch of, like, pills, just any pills that were in the house. Mm-hmm. He just dumped them all. And I had to see my dad behind those glass because he was in a psychiatric ward for a full week. And that's where we had to go visit him. So, like, it's fucking, one, it's, like, very wild and traumatic because I remember asking my dad, like, I just straight up was like, are me and Matt not important enough to be around for? Because I was, like, 13 and my brother was 16. And, yeah, it's fucking, it takes a toll. And I know that's why me and my brother also got so big was because we're just eating our feelings because we didn't understand why the fuck is our dad trying to kill himself.
Yeah.
But then we realized that there was some, you know, infidelity happening that we didn't know about. Dad's trying to kill himself. Like, it was insane. But, like, you know, everybody had to go to therapy. Everybody had to, like, really communicate and be open again. And yeah, it takes time. But I was just that girl too. That's just like, just eating.
Yeah.
It's eating, eating, eating. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's fucking sucks. Yeah. So I feel you, girl.
Yeah.
It's not fun.
It's not. Mm-mm. And it's hard because when you're an emotional eater, you don't only eat in the bad times. You eat in the good times.
Like, in the good time. Yes.
I studied all night and I got an A on my test. Let me go to the store. I'm going to go get a cookie. Like, oh, I had a really shitty day. I'm going to feel better by having a cookie. So, like, that just adds up and adds up and adds up. And it got to the point like where now I'm like, I am an addict. I am a food addict. And I know even as a therapist, like in the DSM, like obviously food addiction isn't like a real thing. It's not like an actual diagnosis. But when you look at all the symptoms of like a substance use addiction, and then you look at how like all the things you have with food, like it's very correlated. It's just the only difference is obviously we need food to survive. We need food to live. So when it comes to like even when people criticize people for having weight loss surgery or for using GLP-1s, I tell people like, would you tell someone that's addicted to drugs? Like if they're using crack, do you tell someone, oh, just have, just try having a little bit less crack? No, you tell them to go to rehab. You tell them to separate themselves from the substance that they're addicted to. But if you're addicted to food, you cannot separate yourself from food because you literally need food to live. And that's what pisses me off so much about people when they like, they just don't understand. Like there's obesity is such a complex disease. And for a lot of people, food addiction is a part of it. And
it really is.
It might not necessarily be like the food itself, but obviously like that addiction to getting like that dopamine rush that like the food gives you, just like any, that's why transfer addiction exists, right? Because it's like, if you can't get that source from the food, then you might turn to something else. Right. But that was,
which we see all the time in this, in the community, unfortunately, but it's real. Guys, it's real.
And that's one thing, like, I, even as a therapist, like, I had to, like, sit down with myself and be like, okay, yes, I am an addict. I have to own that. And, like, moving forward, like, that's how I have to live my life. Like, since having surgery, I have not gone inside a Cold Stone at all. Because I know, because I know that Cold Stone ice cream was one of those things that, like, I could very easily, like, order the biggest cup and like that thing has like over 1,000 calories just in one serving, and it's like that, like I know if I go there it's a slippery slope, so I'm just not gonna go.
100%. And that's the key, is like, don't introduce those foods or go to those places. I was the same way. I waited years before I had a Red Lobster biscuit, because I would eat 4 to 5 just sitting there talking to people. And it's just so uncontrollable. Or Baskin Robbins. I wouldn't step foot in Baskin Robbins for the same reason as yours. It's like, yeah, like these are things that you just can't have in your life until you can. I now can have, go to Red Lobster, just have one biscuit, but I'm also 10 years out. It took a lot of therapy and a lot of work to get to that point. It's not easy, guys. So just know you're not alone in that at all. Because like, it is so much easier for drug addicts to get clean because they can separate themselves. And for us, it's just so fucking hard. And it's really a chemical response. And it's like, yeah, we like how it feels because it's always been with us, right? Like, you're an only child. So like, it's almost like that's our other front. Like, these are, this is what makes us feel good, whether, like you said, whether we're happy or not. And I thought, because I feel like a little dummy, but I thought emotional eating meant that I had to be crying or upset to eat. And I was like, I don't do that. I'm not a crier just eating. But I realized, oh, that's, it's not just those feelings either. It could be frustration. It could be anger. It could be the whole, I deserve this later, when it's like, you don't deserve this later. Like, that's not how this works. So it's just, it's definitely a mind fuck. That's for sure.
Absolutely.
It really is. So when did you get to the point where you're like, I can't do this? Like, this is too much.
So in 2023, I went to see my endocrinologist. Like, I go every 6 months for my thyroid. And she was like, hey, have you ever thought of having weight loss surgery? And I was like, well, have I thought of it? Sure. Have I actually, like, wanted to do it? Not exactly.
Pause for 1 second.
It's like, oh, who's this?
That's the next one.
Got it.
Love it. Okay.
Okay.
And go.
Okay. So in 2023, I went to see my endocrinologist. Like, I always go every 6 months. And she asked me, she's like, you know, have you ever considered, like, thought about getting weight loss surgery? I'm like, have I thought about it? Yes, but I've always wanted to do it on my own, right? Like all of us do, right? And she's like, well, you've been trying on your own for so long. Like, you've been doing CrossFit. Mm-hmm. I started CrossFit July 2020. And I gained plenty of weight since starting CrossFit. So it's like, again, it's not the exercise that's going to get you there. It's your food habits, right? But a lot of us are victim to that. Like, there would be times where I'd go to CrossFit twice a day thinking that that was what was going to lead me to losing all the weight. And no, like, I needed to fix my food habits. And any time that I did, it would only be for so long. And then I would just go right completely back to normal, right? Because it's like the black and white thinking where it's like, oh, like I ate this cookie, so now I'm going to eat this pasta and then I'm going to eat this. And it's like, oh, I already ruined the day. Oh, I already ruined the week. Oh, I already ruined the month. And it's just like, it's that back and forth.
Like, fuck it.
That back and forth, yo-yo and a landslide, right? So she's like, yeah, but you've been trying for years and you lose weight, but then you gain weight and then you gain even more. And it's getting to the point where now you're like close to 300 pounds. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. And so I took her advice. I went to go see the surgeon. And I spoke to her and I was still kind of like skeptical about it. I was like, okay, I'm going to see her. I'm going to see if I like her, see what she says and go from there. So I had an appointment with her and she kind of explained the whole process. It was like a 4-month minimum process where I would have to see her once a month. I would have to get, like, you know, the site clearance, cardiology clearance, clearance from my primary physician, all the blood work, EKG, all that kind of stuff. So I said, okay. And I kind of thought back to some people that I had found online. One of them was Des. Like, I remember seeing her videos of her journey and I was like, wow, like maybe that is something that can like help me one day, you know?
Yeah.
And the next month in October, I went to Egypt on vacation for like a little over 2 weeks. And while I was in Egypt, a few days in, we did an overnight hike to Mount Sinai. So Mount Sinai is quite the mountain to hike. The elevation is pretty high. And we got there, it was like 2:30 in the morning. Because the whole point is to reach the top by sunrise, to like see the sunrise. Just a walk from like the parking lot to the beginning of the mountain, I was already winded. And I remember one of the guides was looking at me because I'm like panting. I'm like, you know, when you're like, you know, out of breath and you're like trying to hide it so the next person doesn't hear you because it's literally like you have to mouth breathe, like you can't even control it with your nose. I'm like, you know, and I'm like trying to hide it. And I could see him. I could see the judgment in his eyes. And he's like, oh, this girl's not going to make it, right? And I've always been so stubborn. I'm like, no matter how big I am, like, I always want to try things. I always want to do things that, like, even if it takes me 10 hours and it takes the other person 3 hours, like, I'll still take the 10 hours, but I want to do it, right? So I'm like,
you're like, I'm a finisher.
Yeah, I'm a finisher. I'm not a quitter. Like, I might complain the whole time, but I'm going to get it done, right? So I see the look of judgment. I'm like, oh, shit, like, this is not going to be good, right? So we're maybe like an hour in and I'm, of course, at the very end of the group, and they have a guide in the beginning, they have a guide at the end. And at this point, there were people that had camels. So a lot of people, even people that are not big, but just maybe not in shape, like they choose to pay for the camel, and the camel will take you 2/3 of the way there. So we had already passed all the budget camels. And my husband had said, hey, do you want to pay for a camel? And I was like, no, I want to do this. He asked me multiple times and I was like, no, I want to do this. So all the budget camels were gone at this point, right? And the guy goes up to me and he's like, you have to get on a camel. If not, like, you have to go back to the bus because it's like pitch black darkness, right? You're in the middle of nowhere. Yeah. And like, it's not safe for us to be so far behind from the group. Like, you have to be able to keep up. So he's like, you either like, or they have like rest stops. So he's like, you're going to have to like stay at a rest stop, go back to the bus, like, or you take a camel, but you're not going to be able to keep going on this hike. But at that point, I have to get the next camel available, which costs like 35 USD, which was a ripoff. But I had no choice, right? Because there were no more camels.
Oh, yeah. Tell them how you like to haggle. You are a haggler.
Oh, my God. Yeah. No, well, you have to, especially in countries like Egypt. Like, they already give you the price. It's like at least double, if not more. The whole, you have to haggle, right? But I was so exhausted, I just hopped on the camel. And then I tell my husband, oh, yeah, haggle with him. And my husband's like, you're already on the camel. This man.
Yeah, like, I can't.
This man's not going to haggle. I was like, all right, oops. So I went on the camel. Went on the camel for the, you know, for like 2/3 of the hike. And I felt so bad for the camel the whole way. Like, the camel was tired because you're just on the uphill. Like, I'm sure I'm way over the weight limit, but in Egypt, they don't care what your weight is. They just want your money, right? So the guy kept like whipping the camel at some point because he was slowing down. And I'm like, I'm so sorry, Mr. Camel. Like, I'm so sorry that I'm doing this to you. We're in this together. But I felt like shit. And then once we got to that certain point, I had like, you know, gained energy since I got to rest for like, it was a good like hour and a half, I would say, that I was on the camel. So I was able to finish the hike. But the rest of the time, I just felt like shit because I'm like, wow. I just traveled all the way to the Egypt to do this hike, and I almost couldn't do it just because of my weight. And I'm like, I have to do something. Like, I can't keep living this way because there's just, I love to travel, and there's been so many things in my life. Like, I went to Aruba, and there is a weight limit on the horses. And at the, I wasn't even at my biggest. I weighed like, I think like 240 at that point. And it was like, no, you can't ride the horse because you're too big. I had gone to Montreal, and there was a really cool zip line over, like, it was like a river or something. And it was like, oh, I'm too big for the zip line. Like, there were so many things I've done traveling that I couldn't do. I had to just sit back and like watch my husband do it because I was over the weight limit. And I was like, no, I can't keep doing this because before you know, I am going to hit 300 pounds, which I did. I did hit 300 pounds. But I'm like, I have to do something about this. So when I came back from Egypt, I had my second consult with my surgeon. And I was like, okay, I am all in. Like, I need to do this. Like, I need to change my life. And I know this is kind of like the reset button that I need. So then I was like, all right, let's do this. And then, you know.
It really is a good reset, guys. It really does help. Yes.
It is. And so, you know, I finished the process by January. And then in January, they didn't have any surgeries left until March. So my surgery was on March 25th of 2024. So it just made 2 years since having surgery. And at my highest, I had hit 306 pounds. At my lowest, I hit 159 pounds back in August. I'm now up from that. I'm at 186 on the DEXA scan. I know it's like more because you have like clothing on and stuff. But the nice thing is that my body fat percentage has gone down like significantly. Like, even this time last year, even though I weighed like 10 pounds less, my body fat percentage was higher than it is now. So working with a coach, tracking your macros, like working out, building muscle, like the body recomposition is insane. Like, sometimes you look at the scale, like I've been beating myself up a lot lately because I was only supposed to purposely gain 10 pounds because I'm on a bodybuilding journey. That turned into 30 pounds and I've lost some of that. But when I look at the scale and then I also look at myself when I see like my CrossFit videos and I can see just from the past 3 months that I joined a new CrossFit gym, like how much heavier like I'm able to lift. I'm like, for me, that's the real win. It's not what the scale is telling me. It's how I feel. Because like the whole purpose of this surgery, it wasn't because I wanted to be skinny, because I wanted to be strong, but be at a healthy weight. Like you know, I don't want to get to the point where I do get diabetes or I get high cholesterol. Or I get like a debilitating disease where like I can't live like a long and healthy life. So it's like, even though I've been kind of beating myself up for gaining that weight, like I know that most of that has been muscle. And that's like, honestly, mm-hmm. like a really good thing that I'm now very proud of, now that I did a DEXA scan today and I can see like, okay, my hard work hasn't been for nothing.
Can you explain to people what is a DEXA scan? If you don't know.
Yeah. So a DEXA scan, it's like the most reliable measurement of like figuring out like your body fat, like your lean mass, your fat mass, your bone density, your visceral fat. Your visceral fat is super important to know. That's like the fat that surrounds your internal organs. And that's actually the fat that you want to decrease the most, because from what I can remember, that's the fat that kind of contributes to those like health issues that like yes. are only going to get worse with age, right? So with the DEXA scan, like you're just kind of like laying down, and it's like a very low radiation x-ray basically. So you're just like laying down still on this machine, and then this little thingy just hovers over you, and it's like do 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 do. It goes like back and forth. It scans your entire body. And then at the end of it, it gives you your results. And what's funny is the DEXA Fit place that I went to today is one that just recently opened near my house. Like the one I used to go to was like an hour away. But what I didn't realize is that they still have access to like the results from the other location. So when I went in, like, you know, I wasn't even going to say anything to the girl. And then she was like, oh, I saw like your past scans. She's like, oh my God, I'm so impressed. Like, congrats. Like, you've lost all this weight. Like, so she was like asking me about my journey. So then I was telling her, and then she wants to know about the bodybuilding. And I showed her the video and she was like, oh my God. And she like completely made my day. She was so sweet, so sweet. But she was saying, and this person, she's like very like stereotypically skinny. And she's like, you know, I recently just did one for the first time and I realized like I'm skinny, but I have way too much body fat. And she's like, I need to build muscle to get healthier. And it's like, yeah, like just by looking at someone, you can't tell how healthy they are. Like people just assume just because you have less weight on you that you're a healthy individual. And that's not the case at all.
Not at all. That's the whole skinny fat thing that we talk about, because you can be small but have like literally pounds of the visceral fat.
Exactly.
And that contributes to like heart disease and all sorts of crazy shit in your body. So I'm glad that you explained it, because it's very important for when the scale stops moving. Yeah. Because it happens, it will happen regardless of what surgery you do. And you people stop saying you're in a stall when it's in your first couple months, because that is no stall. That's literally your body is like changing and moving. And I know doctors that are like, I wish our clients did not step on a scale for like 2 months after surgery, because you have all like the gas in you, the water weight, like it's not, some people it just doesn't drop really fast. And I've already gotten message actually 2 days ago of like, they're like, I'm 3 weeks post-op and I've only lost 4 pounds. And I'm like, that 4 pounds, 3 weeks, that's great. And they're just like, no, it needs to be more. And it's like, no, no, it actually doesn't. Yeah. And you're not in any stall just because you didn't lose a pound this week. Like, I remember there was times where I wouldn't lose for a month, and then all of a sudden it was like 7 pounds. And it's really because your body's doing the decomping and it's trying to figure out where it wants to put things. And our bodies are just really freaking fascinating.
Yeah.
But I want to know, how did you go from you get the surgery and to now like you're a bodybuilder? Like that's a huge jump, you know, like you were trying to just hike up this mountain with a camel, and now you can probably pick up this camel, you know, like you're so strong. It is insane. So like, how did your mindset shift? Like, how did that happen for you?
Yeah. Well, to kind of go back, what a lot of people don't know about my journey is just a few weeks after I had surgery, I had really bad complications. And it's funny because all I did before surgery was like listen to OSLP nonstop. Like I wanted to know the ins and outs. And honestly, I learned way more from listening to your podcast and from my own surgery center. But I'm one of the, like, you know, 5%, whatever the low percentage is, I am one of those people that did have complications after.
Okay.
So the first couple weeks went fine. And then all of a sudden I started throwing up. And I'm like, okay, monitoring this. And it was like, it just kept getting worse. Like, it didn't matter, like, what I was eating or drinking. And you know, in the beginning, you're not eating or drinking much of anything. Like, you're going through the liquid phase and then the puree phase and all that good stuff. And I was, like, following all of that. And I went to my surgeon for, like, a two-week follow-up. And I told her, and I also told her, coincidentally, like, I did just get my period. And in the past, like, there's some months where, like, my period symptoms were just so bad that I would throw up. So I'm like, I don't know if it has anything to do with that. And she's like, okay, maybe it does. Let's keep monitoring and see how it goes. But it just kept getting worse. And it was to the point where I was, like, throwing up, like, 7-8 times a day. I couldn't keep anything down, right? And then it got to the point where, like, I would go to the bathroom and my pee is, like, very dark because I'm so dehydrated that I'm like, do I have, like, a UTI? Like, I don't even know what's going on because, again, my body is just so confused because it can't keep anything in. It's just throwing up. It got to the point that I had to go to the ER. And as someone that works in the ER, we avoid the ER like a plague, right? We don't want to be there unless we're dying. And I felt like I was dying. So I went to the ER. And they, like, did an EKG on me, and they immediately rushed me in. Like, within 30 minutes, I was in there, and I was like, ooh, like, this can't be good.
This can't be good, yeah.
No, yeah. Basically, like, because all my electrolytes were completely off, like, the EKG, like, everything is, like, off. Like, it's like, okay, there's clearly something wrong with this girl. So I go to the ER. I get admitted. I'm in the hospital for, like, 3 days. And, of course, while I'm on IV fluids, I'm doing better because I don't have to actually put anything in my mouth, right? Like, I'm getting rehydrated. Yeah. And at first, they thought I had a kidney infection because they, like, they scanned my kidney. They scanned my gallbladder. They, like, scanned everything just to see what was going on. So initially, they thought I did have a kidney infection. And then the urine culture came back and they're like, no, you don't have bacteria. It's just like you're just so dehydrated. And that's why like you were having like those symptoms. But before I went to the ER, I had done like a swallow test. I forget the name of it, but basically you have to drink this like white contrast and you're like standing in like a x-ray machine and they're basically trying to see if you have like a stricture, if there's like something wrong with like the actual sleeve from the stomach, like if you have
like a leak or something.
Yeah, like if you have a leak or anything. So I did that and there was no leaks, but they said, oh, you have a lot of GERD, like heartburn. Like you could literally see it in you. And they're like, that's probably one of the big causes of what's happening. So I went to the ER and they were like, okay, like you're better now, you can go home. I was like, okay. And then the next day, I had, like, really, really bad pain in my back. And that was part of my symptoms before. And I just assumed, like, that's just, like, from, like, cramps, right? Sometimes you get cramps, like, in your lower back.
Oh, in the back?
Right?
Yeah.
But I'm 100%. Like, okay, at this point, it's definitely not from that. That's gone. And I could not, like, I even bought dissolvable Tylenol that you just, like, put on your tongue and swallow it. Even that, I would throw up. So I'm like, I can't even take something for pain. So I was, like, super depressed. I'm like, I got this surgery to help my health, like, to better my health. And now, like, I literally feel like I'm dying, right? And I went back to the hospital. I ended up staying in the hospital for over a week. And within 2 months, I lost 70 pounds. And a lot of that was muscle because, like, I would get up and I would walk, like, 5 steps and I would have to sit. Like, I just felt so weak. Like, I had nothing in me. And I was so depressed and I was just like, oh, my God, like, when are they going to figure out what's happening? Like, when are they going to figure out what's wrong? And by the end of me being in the hospital and the hospital I was in, they ended up transferring me to the hospital where I had my surgery because surgeons don't like to touch, like, other surgeon patients. And they were like, well, we're going to transfer you, let them figure it out. And my surgeon was like, listen, your gallbladder has gallstones. It doesn't look bad now. But with that, with the GERD and everything else, it could be contributing to your symptoms because, like, I couldn't even take, like, the Zofran for my nausea. Like, I would throw that up. So it's like I can't even take the medication that's supposed to help me not be nauseous, that makes me immediately throw up, right? So she's like, it's like your stomach is like a ball of acid. And the minute you put something in, it rejects it. And then because I have to wait a little bit before I can eat or drink anything, it just, the acid just builds up again. And then the minute I put something in my mouth, boom. Even just like the minute I would wake up, I was just throwing up bile. Like, and it burns. And I got to the point.
That where I'm hurts.
Like, yes, it's very painful. Like, I was just scared all day. Like, I was just crying. I was just scared of, like, when am I going to throw up again? Like, I was scared to eat. I was scared to drink. And, like, you need to hydrate. You need to have your minimum protein. None of that was happening because I was too busy throwing up all day, right? And I just felt miserable. And I'm like, okay, now am I going to get cancer in my throat and my esophagus because it's, like, all I do is throw up, right? So when my surgeon was like, okay, your gallbladder looks okay, but we can try to take it out and see if that helps your symptoms. And I'm like, doc, take out whatever organs are not necessary. If you think that might fix the problem, please take it out of me, right? So we scheduled my gallbladder surgery for like a week after that. And this was in May. And 2 days before I had my gallbladder surgery, they had me do an IV infusion. It's called the banana bag. It's like a ton of vitamins in this, like.
Oh, yeah. I've done that.
Yeah. And I guess it's called a banana bag because it kind of like, it's like the color of a banana, like the liquid is yellow. Mm-hmm. So ever since I had that IV infusion, it was May 15th, 2024. I will never forget the date. I never threw up again. So I had that infusion and I think it just hydrated my body so well that I was able to actually like eat and drink and like it kind of like neutralized the acid in my stomach. And then with taking my gallbladder out, so my surgeon said after they remove your gallbladder, they send it out for it to get like a workup to see like the results.
Yeah.
And by the time they took it out of me, like a week later, like it was bad. So she was like, it was just a matter of time. Like you would have had a full on gallbladder attack. So she's like, I'm pretty certain that's what was making everything worse for you. And since that day, there's no wood in my car, but someone else knock on wood for me. Since that day, it's been 2 years now. I have never thrown up again, like for any reason.
That's wild. Yeah.
And I'm like, I think the next time I have to throw up from being sick or something, like it's gonna like trigger that panic that I had 2 years ago.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that was rough. And then, so again, I lost 70 pounds in 2 months, right? But then for that next month, I gained 5 pounds and I like, then it took me like another month. And then finally it started coming off because my body is very confused. Like, you're not feeding me. Now you're feeding me. Now you don't have a gallbladder. Like, it's your body is going through so much trauma that your body's like, what is happening, right? My body was used to, like, having Cold Stone and crumble cookies and all these things. And all of a sudden, it's like, cut off.
Yeah.
It's like all you're getting is, like, water and protein shakes.
Yeah, it's like, hold up. And that's what people have to remember is, like, our body is trying to keep up with us. So it's like, you can do the surgery, but really our body is like, it takes a couple months for it to go, okay, this is what we're doing now. Like, it's not like our brain where we understand it right away. It's literally like our body is going to take a little bit and you have to be patient with it. And that's where we get to be like, where we get hard on ourselves because it's like, dude. But like you went through some crazy trauma and people, this can happen. I do hear a lot about gallbladders. So this is not uncommon for us. It happens when you have rapid weight loss and gallstones can build up. And I know a few people that have had it done because they had the surgery and about 6 months to 8 months later, they had to have it removed. I thank God still have all my organs, but like, it's okay if this happens to you. This doesn't mean that you failed in any way. This is just your body reacting. And thank God we can live without gallbladders, right?
Yes.
So, yeah. Thank goodness. So you went through all this trauma.
Yeah.
You finally are not puking.
Yeah.
Woo-hoo. So how did that feel? And then what did you start doing after?
Yes. So, okay. So for the people that know me, they know, like, I love CrossFit, right? So before surgery, I had started CrossFit July of 2021. And I was like, that is, as even as a therapist, like CrossFit is my therapy, right? Like after work, like that's my de-stressor. You know, it used to be that and food. Now it's just a working out, right? But a lot of times I would leave work. I'd get a treat on my way to CrossFit, and then I would go to CrossFit, right? But I completely lost my train of thought. Okay, so that whole time, right? So because I had two back-to-back surgeries, I couldn't work out. Like, all I could do was, like, just, like, easy cardio, like, go on a walk or something like that. And so because it was two surgeries back-to-back, I wasn't clear to go back to CrossFit until August 8th. That was, like, the day that I had my appointment with my surgeon. So she's like, okay, you're good now. And she's like, still take it easy. But now you can lift more than 15 pounds. Like, go slow. See how your body feels. So that's immediately what I went back into. Literally the day I went to her appointment, I rushed right back to CrossFit. But even before CrossFit, like, I was still going there because, like, I wanted to see my friends. But all I was doing, I was just on the assault bike the entire time. Like, I was just pedaling really slowly just to, like, get my body moving. But I also wanted to be careful because it's, like, I have, like, double the stitches now on my stomach because it's, like, two surgeries. Mm-hmm. And she was very specific with, like, no core work, like, nothing with your abs. So I was, like, trying to, like, follow what she was saying. But yeah, as soon as she gave me the go-ahead, I went right back into CrossFit. And boy, was that a rude awakening. I picked up the 35-pound female bar, and I was like, oh, this feels very heavy. And I was like, before I, like, my numbers, I was, like, deadlifting 265 pounds. I was back squatting 235 pounds. And now all of a sudden, lifting 35 pounds was like, ooh, like, this is not good, right? And the funny thing is, I signed up for a CrossFit competition that was happening in the beginning of September. And I signed up for it before I was cleared because I knew that day she would clear me. So I signed up. I was like, okay, this way, like, the minute that I can start working out, I'm going to, like, start practicing for it. And yeah, no, I was humbled very quickly. It was to the point where I'm like, do I have to cancel doing this competition? And it was a partner competition. I didn't want to let my partner down. And my partner, Rose, she was great. She was like, no, we're going to do this together. And honestly, like, she had to carry me through, like, so many of the lifts. Like, I couldn't even do a 65-pound, oh, my God, I can't even remember.
A bench press?
No, not a bench press. It's like a jerk. Like you do a clean, like, you pick it up from the floor and you have it here and, like, you jerk. It's like when you lift it up. Like, I couldn't even do a 65-pound jerk. And before, I was doing, like, over 100 pounds. So it was, like, it was very, very humbling. Like, because I knew I lost weight and I lost muscle, but it's just from just not working out, like, not lifting weights for 4 months, like, I felt like I lost all of my strength. Like, and that was tough. That was really hard to deal with because it's, like, I always poured my heart and soul into CrossFit. So to go back into something that I loved, and I felt like I couldn't do it. I was like, oh, man, I'm like, this is going to, it's like day one all over again. Like, I have to.
Yeah.
Like, there were a lot of movements that I call it the baby bar. It's like the 15-pound bar. Like, well, I had to go back to that bar for a lot of movements just to kind of, like, build back up, like, my strength. And that was super humbling. But I mentally, I knew, like, you know, this is my happy place. Like, and for me, it's not just about the workout. I'm a very extroverted person. Like, I need to be with people. And with CrossFit, it's like, even on the days that I don't feel like working out, I feel like seeing my friends. I feel like seeing my people, you know? So it's like, I'm like, I just have to take it one day at a time, right? Mm-hmm. So I restart my CrossFit journey. I build my strength up little by little. And like I had mentioned Des previously, I remember she had posted a video of doing summer shredding, which is a bodybuilding competition, but they have a transformation division, which is for people that have had some sort of weight loss. They have like different categories and you go and you make your own routine. You make a video talking about your journey and then you get on stage and like you show off all your hard work. And before I even considered having weight loss surgery, I was like, you know what? That's going to be me one day. And so over time, like with meeting everyone from the bariatric community online, when I randomly started talking to Rob, Waiting in Vain, Canadian Rob. I was like super impressed by his journey. Like he had done like so many bodybuilding shows, and to see like where he started, to see how shredded he was, I was like, man, like I want to be like you, right? So he kind of like got a group of us together, and we started training for the Radical Body Transformation Show, which is in Toronto, Canada, which is happening in June again. And so that's kind of like what got me started into actually doing bodybuilding. So he was kind of like, you know, coaching a few of us as like a group. And then at first I wasn't taking it very seriously. I was like, you know, I'm proud of like my journey. I'm just going to like take it as it goes. Like I've reached a point where at that point I weighed like 170 something pounds, and I was like, I'm satisfied with where I am. Like if I don't lose anymore, like I don't care. Like I just want to build strength, right? But then after going to JBY and meeting you all and working out with a bunch of people in the gym, I was like, no, I need to do better. Yeah. I need to go all in, right? So after that, I was like, okay, like I'm going to follow this plan. And I was able to drop for Radical Body Transformation. I got down to like 168 pounds.
Nice.
That was an amazing experience. And we all got to hang out in Canada, which was so much fun. And then I did Summer Shredding, which was also in Toronto in August. And for that show, I was able to get down to 159, which I never thought I would ever see that number again in my life.
Yeah.
So it's been a wild ride. And it's hard, and it burns you out. Like tracking like your protein is one thing, but tracking like all of your macros, weighing out every single thing you put in your mouth every single day, it's exhausting. It's hard. And
it's a full-time job. It is a full-time job.
And like I feel like anytime I eat something, by the time I eat it, it's cold, because now it's like I warm things up and then I'm measuring everything and putting it all together and putting it on the app. And I feel like by the time I eat, it's like it's not even as good anymore, right? But honestly, I came to the point where, like, you know, even though I had plateaued before, when you actually track everything, and it's not about like eating less. I'm like with my case at the time, Rob actually upped my macros. Like my surgery center, they were like, oh, eat 800 to 1,000 calories a day for the rest of your life. And I'm like, well, that's not going to work out for me, because I actually, like, move my body. I'm not a couch potato. Like, that's not feasible, right?
Yeah, so, it's not at all for you.
No. So after meeting Rob at JBY, like, he gave me, like, new macros, like, and he told me to track. So I was tracking. I was pretty much only eating, like, 1,000 to, like, 1,100 calories a day. He upped me at the time to, like, I think, like, 1,500 or 1,600. And immediately, like, the weight just started dropping. Because it's like your body is in starvation mode. Like, you're just on a plateau because, like, you're not fueling your body enough. Your body's just hanging on to everything. And
people don't believe me or believe anybody when we say that. Like, I've said this probably 1,000 times to people. And you can just see their face go, like, that's not true. And I'm just like, nah, bitch, it is. Like, you sometimes have to put more food in your body to lose weight, because your body really is thinking you're not going to get any more. And you've been telling it that for how long? Like, okay, you're only going to get 1,000. So you better hold on to it, because we need more, especially in your case, because you're working out so much. Like, you need more, or you could pass out while you're working out.
Yeah.
And guys, like, I know when you guys are in stalls, you're thinking, eat less. No, it is eat more, move more, not eat less, move more. And because Rob had me track. And yeah, I was getting about 1,000 a day, but my protein was like 60. Like now it's way better, but like you have to track for a little bit just to see where you're at. And I know some people, it's triggering for you guys, but we got to figure out something because you have to know the numbers. Like we need to figure it out, whether it's through therapy or through your personal trainer or a coach, because even they can just look at your numbers for you and talk to you about it instead of you doing it. Like, because numbers don't lie, and that's how you can actually change what's going on in your body. Like, look how much you've changed. And even when we were talking about the DECA scan, like, I'd like you to explain a little bit how, like, you got it now and you're still like, you're up. Like, I know that we talked about it a little bit, but you're up a couple, like a 20 pounds or something.
Yeah.
And like,
I have it in my little notebook here.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it's insane. Like the muscle mass and the fat mass that's actually there. It's completely different.
Yeah. So I actually, the last time I did the DEXA scan was back in July. So it was between my two bodybuilding shows. So on that day, I weighed 162.9 pounds, which 101.3 pounds of that is lean mass. So that's muscle. My body fat percentage was a 34.3%. My visceral fat, which is the fat in your organs, was 1.05 pounds, which is good, but they want it to be like under a pound, right? But it was pretty good.
Okay.
So that was my last scan back in July. So back in July, I had 101.3 pounds of lean mass. Today, I have 116.4 pounds of lean mass. So I gained 15 pounds of muscle. And my body fat percentage is a 34.4. So my body fat only went up 0.1%, right? So I have like just a tiny bit more fat, but I have so much more lean muscle on me that that's like the whole point. Like when it comes to bodybuilding, like you do sometimes have to purposefully bulk. I was only supposed to gain 10. It went to 30, right? But the good news is now some of that weight that I've lost has been fat because now I've retained so much muscle. So now it's like the goal is to try to focus on burning fat. But that's why it's so important to hit your numbers. And it's not just the protein. You have to hit the carbs. Rob is like always yelling at me because it's so hard when you're so used to people telling you to do like a high protein, low carb diet, but the carbs are so important for your muscles. And when you lose too much weight too fast, like most of the time you're losing a lot of the muscle. And as you lose muscle, you're slowing down your metabolism. So it's actually way better to do it nice and slowly, like work out, hit your numbers, and have like maybe less of a deficit. And it's something that you can actually keep up with because when you cut down your macros so much, like when you're used to eating a certain amount and you have to cut it down, like it's most likely going to lead to you to binge, right? Which has happened to so many of us as we diet, right? The diets that never work, they don't work because we're doing the wrong thing, right? Because it's like you go and you cut down so much and then you get that like feedback like, oh, the scale went down 5 pounds. I'm going to keep like doing this. But then you're starving yourself so much that the minute something happens unexpectedly in your life, you go right back to that coping skill, which is emotional eating. And then you go on a binge and those 5 pounds that you lost by starving yourself, now you gain 10 back, right? And it's like that never ending cycle. And so, and it's, we're all guilty of doing this, right? At least most of us are guilty.
I know I am. Yeah. Yep.
And it's like, it doesn't matter sometimes how many times people tell you these things, you don't learn your lesson until it hits you, right? Plenty of people said the same thing, and I had done all my nutrition research, but it's just so hard. And also with the food noise, like when your brain is telling you to eat something, like it's hard to combat that. And that's why I remind people that like shit on having surgery, they shit on GLP-1s. And I'm like, if you don't have food noise, then shut up. Like you don't understand what people are going through. Like, and it's hard because even now with the bodybuilding, like I'm kind of thinking about food all day, right? Because I have to like, I have to meal prep. I have to plan my meals. I have to track everything. And it does get exhausting, but I do know like I have an end goal in sight, but that's not my primary goal. And I've had this conversation with Rob and I'm like, I'm training for a high rocks. I'm training for a half marathon. I never in my life did I ever think like I'm going to run like 13.1 miles one day, right? So I have a running plan. Last Sunday, I ran 8 miles. That's the most I've ever run in my life on a Sunday with no medal at the end. Like, it's not for a race. It's for me, for my training, right? This coming Sunday, I have to run 9 miles, you know? So it's like I'm doing these things because it's like I want to prove to myself that I can do it. It's for me. It's not for anyone else. But I'm like, it's gone to that point where – yes, I was very much focused on the bodybuilding last year, but this year I'm like, I don't really care about how I place on stage. Obviously, I want to do a good job. Like, I want to learn my routine. I want to perfect it. Like, I want to put my best foot forward on stage. But I'm not going to cry about it if I don't get first place. I'm not expecting first place, like, because I'm
right.
Not,
yeah.
I'm not going 100% all into bodybuilding like maybe some of my other competitors are. But again, if I'm training for a high rocks, if I'm training for a half marathon, I have to feel my body or else I'm going to pass out while I'm running. Like, I need to be able to eat enough. But for me, what's important is, again, I do want to lose some more fat. I want to continue to build muscle. Like, for me, my long-term goal is to be the athlete I've always wanted to be, but I never could be. Like, I've been wanting to do a Spartan race for years. I literally volunteered, Mel, for so many Spartan races. I wasted so many, like, I drove all the way to PA, like, middle of nowhere to volunteer, right? And then I would sign up for one. And I would cancel the day before because I was so scared, because I knew I wasn't ready for it. And my husband, like, would go with other people and do it. And sometimes I would give away my free race to other people. And I'm like, now that I've been able to lose the weight, I can actually train for it. Like, I have arthritis in my knees. I've actually had arthritis since I was a kid. People look at me like, you're young. How do you have arthritis? I'm like, it's genetic. Mm-hmm. I was a kid. I had juvenile arthritis. It was, like, cured. But then as an adult, at 27, I got diagnosed with arthritis again. And it's like, I think it's either for every, like, pounds you have on you, it's like 3 or 4 pounds of pressure you're putting on your joints, right? So as you're running, as you're doing all these physical activities, like, it's just like killing your knees, right? And my knees are shot from all this running, like, I'm not going to lie. But mentally, like, I keep pushing myself because I'm like, I know it's just pain. It's not like I'm, like, breaking anything. It's just the arthritis is going to keep arthritising. All I can do is, like, you know, take some Tylenol. I haven't taken ibuprofen yet. Like, I have to, like, I know some people say, like, with time you can because of the surgery, but I haven't talked to my surgeon about it. On race day, I'm definitely going to take it because it's like, I need, like, an anti-inflammatory for this inflammation.
Correct. And I would say, because I am 10 years out, I've taken it. It's not a problem. I think it's a problem if you're, like, an abuser of Tylenol and ibuprofen. Well, you can take Tylenol, but ibuprofen stuff, anything that, because, like, I only take it for cramps, you know, or, like, I'll wait for a headache. And then I'm like, all right, I'm just going to have to take one. And so it's like, I get the whole concern, but I think once you're, like, a further out, it's just, you become a normie again.
Yeah.
That's just kind of what happens to your body. You're like, it's done being in shock. Mm-hmm. It's done with all the things. And now we can process a little bit better and have all of those things that we need. And especially if you're doing running, like, you're going to need to be icing. You're going to need an anti-inflammatory. Like, that's going to be big for you. And congratulations, 8 miles. Holy shit, girl.
Yeah.
That's impressive. So tell people, what do you eat? Because you do have to hit these macros.
Yeah.
So what are you doing to do that? Because I know I have to really be diligent of, like, got to have a protein shake. I guess sometimes I'll have a protein bar, just a supplement. So.
Yeah.
What does your food intake look like, girl?
Yeah. So my number one food on my food pyramid is cottage cheese. Like,
okay.
If there is a cottage cheese shortage, like, I'm screwed.
It's your fault.
Yeah. No, it's not my fault, but I am screwed if there's no cottage cheese in the supermarket. Because there has been, like, Good Culture is definitely, like, the best brand.
That's the one.
And for the past couple of months, like, I kind of gave up. So I found another awesome choice. There's a brand called Friendship. I only see it in, like, a regular supermarket. You won't find it at, like, Target or Walmart or anything like that. But there's one that says whipped on it. So it's, like, blended already. So if anyone doesn't like cottage cheese because of the texture, I would suggest trying this one. Because the texture is, it's kind of like ricotta cheese.
Okay.
If that makes sense. So it's
really,
it's like, it's easier on, like, the taste buds. But for me, I've been the type of person, like, I would always eat and drink. my whole life. And I've been very good with following the rules. Like, I wait to drink. I usually wait more than 30 minutes because if I try, like, I still feel full, right? But in order for this food to go down, I need a sauce. So basically what I do with every meal is I combine cottage cheese and I have a low carb sauce. It's like the G Hughes brand or whatever it's called, the burger sauce. And I measure out. I measure out half of a serving and I mix that into cottage cheese. And that's like basically my sauce that I use to eat whatever I'm eating. And that way it's like I'm adding protein. And with that specific cottage cheese, it's only like 1% fat. It's actually like even better macros than the good culture one. So it's very clean. Like it has very low calories, very high protein, very low fat. So in the morning I eat, I buy like egg bites from either like Trader Joe's or Costco, and the egg bites have some carbs in them. So I combine that. I combine the cottage cheese and the, sauce. So I have my protein, my fats, my carbs. I eat that for breakfast pretty much every day. Some days I'll eat like a protein waffle with like a no sugar syrup. That's like kind of like a treat. Sometimes I've done like I've eaten like a protein bagel, but then I feel like it won't. It doesn't satisfy me as much because it's I don't know. It's like I feel like I eat it and within like 40 minutes, like I can eat again. So I feel like with my egg bite concoction, like that fuels me better.
So do you put the cottage cheese sauce stuff on the egg bite?
So I just like, I just, it probably like looks crazy. I just like mush everything and like combine it all together and I eat it. So it's like a bowl. So it's like a bowl. I just like combine everything and I eat it together. And sometimes like I'll just like actually like make eggs and I just eat the eggs and I have the cottage cheese thing on the side and I'm just like eating that. I used to actually just eat egg whites and combine it all. But one of my coworkers decided to report me to HR because of the smell of the egg whites. Cause I would like warm them up in the microwave. And then I even tried warming them up in a different microwave, but then, like, we all, like, eat in the office and stuff. So then she complained again to HR, and HR was like, well, we can't tell you what you can or can't eat, but we can just say no eating in the office. And I was like, I don't want to make this a problem for anyone else. So I'm like, I'm just not going to eat egg whites at work, right? So then I had to figure out something else. But yeah, that used to be my thing, but back when I just had the egg whites, I was having like no carbs for breakfast. And that was okay earlier in my journey. But now like I have a much bigger appetite. It's crazy. It's like it's only been 2 years and I feel like I have a normal stomach again. Like I can eat like 5 cookies in a sitting if I wanted to. But this time last year, I would eat a cookie and like I would be satisfied. So it's like you kind of have like a normal appetite. You have like a kind of like, and obviously it's like you still have restriction because again, if I eat something and then I try to drink something, I immediately feel it. So I know my stomach is still restricted. But those slider foods, like you can just slide them all in, no problem. Like everything that you guys talked about when I would listen to your podcast, like it's very true. Like I can feel that now 2 years later where it's like, I know this is a battle that I'm going to be facing for the rest of my life. Like I'm going to have my months where maybe I'm not tracking and I'm just trying to intuitively eat. But if I see the scale go up, I know, okay, I just have to go back to tracking, to doing what works. And in the future, if I need to use a GLP-1, so be it. But it's really like you have to put in the work every single day. You really do.
It's insane, actually, how much work you actually have to do to take care of yourself. And it's just frustrating because we were never taught this.
No.
And that's for everyone, whether you're a skinny person or not skinny person. None of us were taught actually how to take care of ourselves. You know, our parents were like winging it as much as they could. We have way more knowledge and resources than we've ever had in a lifetime. So there's no excuse anymore of not knowing what to do. It's just whether you want to do it or not. And I just want people to know, like, it's okay if you regain. It's okay that if you, like, if I start at 308, she started at 306. Like, it really doesn't matter where you start as long as you start. Mm-hmm. And I want to make sure I know personally that you had some good support, but I want to make sure, like, everyone knows, like, what kind of support did you have mm-hmm. going into this? Was the family at least good on board? Did you have any friends that kind of sucked mm-hmm. about this? Like, how did that go?
Yeah. So, my husband has been, like, insanely supportive throughout the whole thing. Like, anyone that knows Hugo knows he is amazing. He's a sweetheart. So, he's been my number one. So, funny enough, I actually didn't tell my mom I was having surgery until, I think, like, 2 months before I had it. Like, I was very, much in the process. I told my dad first. So my mom, and I know this is very, like, cultural and stuff, but, like, my mom used to just call me fat all the time when I would, like, mm-hmm. go to her house and go visit. And, like, I would go there, like, we would go there for, like, Sunday to have lunch together. And I'm like, I barely have the food in my mouth already. And she's already criticizing me for, like, what I'm eating in this. So that's, like, we can have a whole episode on just that. But we have a very difficult relationship, and, like, she would always just, like, talk shit to me. She would literally tell me, oh, you're never going to be able to lose this weight. And she would say, you're so fat, like, you're going to have surgery to lose the weight. So for a very long time, I was so opposed to having surgery because I didn't want to give in to that. I have too much mm-hmm. of an ego that I was like, no, I'm going to prove it to my mom that I can lose this weight on my own, that I can, like, control what I eat and cross it and this and that. So that was a very hard pill to swallow for me to then be like, yeah, I am going to have surgery, even though so many times he very, very much said all these, like, very mean things to me. And I know they came from a good place because she, like, cares about me and, like, wanted me to be healthier, but it's not just health, it's also vanity, right? Because she would also mm-hmm. say, like, oh, like, you used to be so beautiful and this and that, and, like, you know, I miss how you used to look and this and that. And it's like, okay, but that shouldn't be your priority. Your priority should be my health. Because, again, I would get my blood work, and I didn't even have pre-diabetes. Like, all my levels were always fine, but I knew it was just a matter of time that, like, something would pop up, right?
Yeah.
So that's like another reason why I was so reluctant to even get surgery, because I wanted to prove my mom wrong. I wanted to do it on my own. And so for me to be like, yeah, I am having surgery, like, that was tough for me to even, like, tell her that. But I am thankful, though, that when I did tell her, like, she never said anything, like, she never was like, oh, I told you so or anything like that. Like, that would have.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So that was, like, the one redeeming aspect on her end, that she didn't do that. But yeah, that was really tough.
And she's been good ever since, like, no issues.
Well, you know, my mom's, she definitely has borderline personality disorder, so that's, like, a whole other can of worms. So there's always something with that, right? But yeah, I mean, I will say, but it's funny, right? Because I purposely was going on a bulk, and then I gained more than I was supposed to. But yeah, she was already saying, like, oh, you gained weight. Like, she was already, like, talking shit. And I'm like, you need to stop.
Whoa.
And I told her, I was like, listen, I'm doing bodybuilding. Like, I'm purposely gaining weight and this and that. But yeah, no. So that's never going to change. Like, you can't fix that. And that's just, she's in her 60s. She's from another country. She was raised differently. Yeah. Like, that's never going to change.
It's a different time. Yeah. It comes from a very different time.
Yeah. So, like, I just try to let it. I mean, sometimes it gets to you. I try to, like, roll it off of me and not, like, listen to what she says and not take it to heart. But yeah, so she wasn't exactly the most supportive person. But when I was, like, throwing, like, I actually, like, stayed at my mom's house for, like, I stayed with my parents for a little bit when I was throwing up, just because my mom, like, only works part time. My dad's retired. So they just had more time to, like, give, like, in case something happened and everything. So, yeah, she was really supportive when I was, like, going through all that stuff. But Yeah, I would say like I definitely had a good support system between my parents, between my husband, and actually I had a lot of friends that had surgery. And oh, some friends weren't out in the open. Like one of my friends like told me specifically that she had surgery, but like most people don't know that about her. So that was like very helpful for me when I was even just trying to make the decision. And it's very funny because I remember her asking me, because, you know, with the laparoscopic surgery, you get those little scars, right? So she even, like, yeah, asked me about, like, oh, like, you know, do you think you'd be uncomfortable if you were wearing, like, because at that point, I didn't even know if I was going to, like, tell people I had surgery yet. Like, I didn't know mm-hmm. how much I was going to share. She's like, oh, would you feel uncomfortable if you're wearing, like, a crop top and, like, your scar showed or something? I was like, man, like, I've never been a crop top girl. Like, I'm not worried about that. And it's so funny how quickly that changed because now yep. at the gym, like, and even before, like, I got to my leanest, like, the minute I got hot, I would take that shirt off. Like, I'm just in my sports bra wearing shorts. Like, I don't care. The loose skin is, like, flopping around. Like, I don't give a shit. Like, I'm hot. And now I'm, like, it's so crazy because before in CrossFit, like, no matter how hot I felt, like, I would keep my shirt on. I would never take it off. Like, I was so scared to, like, show my body. And it's so funny. Mm-hmm. I go back and look at my videos and I see myself like tugging my shirt down as if that's going to yep. hide my stomach. Like,
I know we all do it. We all think it's going to help. It's so funny because it doesn't. It no. doesn't. I did that for a decade plus of thinking yeah. every time I get up, right? If I just pull it down yeah. a little bit more, no one's going to know.
Yeah. No, not
so
at
goofy.
All.
So,
not at all.
Yeah.
But yeah, so like, so I, thankfully I did have like a lot of support. And then right before I had surgery, I did end up telling like some of my friends at the gym that I was going to at the time. And like, some were supportive, some weren't. Some were like, oh, my brothers, sisters, aunts, uncles, dog sitters, person had the surgery and gained all the weight back. And I'm like, thank you so cool. much for your support. That's like the last thing I need to hear right now, you know? So yes, I did have some people that, I had one person that was like, oh, I don't think you need to do that. Like, you could have done it on your own. And I'm like, okay, I'm just going to ignore you. You know, like, I've been trying for years on my own mm-hmm. and it just keeps piling up. And it's like the 300 pounds is going to turn into 400. It's going to turn into 500. Like, if I don't stop myself now, it's not going to get better.
And look at you now. Like, you did the damn thing.
Yeah.
I am loving this for you. And you know, it wouldn't be a show unless I asked. So, like, how's the new life with Hugo? Mm-hmm. How is, like, being intimate and, like, does it feel different? Do you feel more confident in your skin? Like, how is that for you?
Yeah. It's funny when it comes to confidence. So, like, we've been together since I was 18. So, it's been a long time. So, he has seen me. Like, when he met me, I only weighed 130 pounds. So, Hugo has seen me
awesome.
at all levels of life.
At every.
Yes, at yep. everything, right? So, but it's interesting because when I was younger and I was skinny, I didn't have the same confidence that I actually have. Even when I was bigger, I had way more confidence in myself. Like, it just comes with age, with experience.
Yep.
But yeah, so like I, in Delulu, right, like I weighed, even at my highest weight, like a lot of times when I would wear certain things, I was like, okay, I look good today. Like I, you know, I still felt good about myself. But then when I caught a bad angle, I would be like, where did that stomach come from? Like, it's so crazy. Like yep. you look at yourself in the mirror and then you see like a video of yourself from a different angle and it's like two completely different looks, right?
Yes.
So
yes.
I, you know, I was still pretty confident in myself. Like I, and again, because I was active, like I could still throw it down in the bedroom. Like that was not a problem. But I'm not gonna lie, like I was so big, like my boobs were so big. Like there were times where it's like you're in certain positions, it's like your boobs are like suffocating you. Like you can't breathe.
Yeah.
Legit, like you cannot breathe where I'm like, oh my God, I'm gonna pass out because I'm like suffocating myself, right? Mm-hmm. So that has been a huge change and it's been like so amazing, like between the weight loss and just like working out, like my flexibility is like insane. Like it's like a whole different ball game.
Yeah,
like being older and knowing more and having more confidence in myself plus losing the weight, it's like forget about it, like no one can tell me shit now.
Yeah. Yep. And that's what I want everybody to get to, because like I know what it's like to be 300 pounds and feeling exhausted and being like, I want to do more, but like I'm sweaty, I'm icky, I don't have the endurance. And then going from that to being like, we can go all night, like this is insane. So it's like, I just want everybody to get to that point, because it's something that we get to enjoy in life. And I'm very proponent of like sexual relations is important in your own physical health and mental health. And I think that it's important for you to talk to your partners about like what's going on with your body, what you don't want, what you do want. It's all about communication. And once you open that door, even just a little bit of talking, it just swings open and then it's fine. It's always like that initial like talk, especially like when me and Eric talked about this when I was getting smaller, he was just like, I hope you know we're not having sex more because you're smaller. It's just because you are now like, let's go.
Yeah.
So you I'm like, yeah, energy. He's like, yeah, because he's like, I don't want you to think I wasn't before, but it was just because you're like, your confidence is up, your self-esteem is up, and you're like, and he thought that was sexy, just the confidence and self-esteem. He was like, the way you walk into a room now is completely different than the way you walked into a room before. And hearing him say that was just like, thank you, right? Like, it wasn't about the actual sex itself, and it wasn't about the look of me. It was my spirit. It was me fully coming out. And that's what I want from people, is when you go through this, I want you to really learn yourself and get to know yourself, because this is a time to do it. Because that first 2 years, it's really about you. Like, I remember telling Eric, like, hey, I hope you don't mind, but the next couple of years is going to be about, my head's going to be in the game. I'm going to be all about this. Like, of course, like, I love you and we'll be doing fun things together, but like, my brain's going to be get healthy, get healthy, get healthy. And while you're doing that, you can get your mental health going too. And you are a therapist, so I wanted to talk to you about the mental health side too, real quick. I know we're running out of time, but I wanted to see like, how important, and I know how important, but I want people to hear this, how important is working on your mental health during this process?
It's super important. And like, I came to realize that, again, when I was having those complications, I'm like, oh, this is why on OSLP, they were always stressing, like, go to therapy. You need therapy. Because I'm like, I just felt so depressed. I was like hopeless and helpless. Like, I wasn't like suicidal or anything like that. But I was like, I was not seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. I'm like, how am I going to get myself out of this situation? Like, I just felt so helpless, because I'm like, I can't, like, I don't know when the throwing up is going to stop. Like, when can I live a normal life again? So it's like, again, whether you have complications or not, like, this journey will send you on a roller coaster. There's, you know, you're on cloud nine when you step on the scale and you see the numbers go down. But then when you hit a plateau where the numbers go up, you're just like down on yourself. Even though people tell you that it's normal, you still tell yourself like, why are these numbers not cooperating? Like, I'm doing everything right. So it's so important to have the support. And again, like, I'm guilty of this. I didn't go through therapy during this journey. I have gone to therapy in the past. But I found people and I found resources to use. Like, I met a lot of amazing fellow bariatric patients online through Instagram. And like, I would talk to people. I remember DMing you like and saying like, hey, I'm going through these complications. Like, do you know anyone that has gone through the same thing? Because like, I need help, right? So I very much use the online bariatric community a lot for support. There were people like, I would just like leave them voice notes. And actually, 2 days before even having surgery, Bariatric Society had an event in New Jersey. And I was like, I have to go. So that helped me so much, like actually like meeting people in person. And people were DMing me at like, knowing that I had surgery, they were like checking in on me and seeing how I was doing. So like, I did also have that support early on, which I think was like amazing. Like, just to have different people to talk to, people that understand the struggles, people that can like help you get through things. Just like we were talking before the show, we were like talking about things and I just talked you through like RBT and all these things. And sometimes you just need that reassurance from someone that knows what you're going through, where you don't have to explain everything. Like, they just already understand you. And again, having a therapist, like, again, I can't say shit because I didn't go to therapy, but I will say, yes, it is very helpful if you are able to see a therapist, but I'm not going to lie. I did a lot of that work on myself. Like, I did a lot of inner reflection. I did a lot of journaling, and I'm like, I have to admit to myself, like, I have a problem. This is my problem. I have an addiction. Like, I have to do these things in this way to get through this journey. And one of my, like, closest friends now, Jessica, that lives in Toronto, like, she's also a therapist. She's also a bariatric patient. We actually met at RBT last year. And yes, we were literally directly competing against each other in, like, the same age bracket and same division. Like, we're born, like, 8 days apart. It's insane.
God, that's so wild.
It's so crazy. Like, I'm like, this girl, like, we're both Sagittarius's, like, we're both therapists, we both had weight loss surgery, like, the commonalities are insane, right? But literally, like, every single day, we, like, leave each other voice notes on WhatsApp. Like, we're constantly talking to each other, we're constantly, like, helping each other out, because this is so crazy of a journey. Like, mm-hmm. No matter what you do, like, and especially now with the bodybuilding, like, it is very stressful. And I was kind of back and forth with, like, I already paid for these shows, so I have to do them, but, like, I kind of don't want to do them anymore, you know? So, like, I had to, like, kind of talk to different people, and then
yep.
And then when you find out people are going through the same exact struggles as you, you're like, oh, okay, this is normal. This is okay. It's okay to be feeling this way. Like, this is how we move forward. So it is very important to get emotional support, because, again, for a lot of us, we went towards the food to cope with our emotions. And one thing I will say, I didn't go to work for 3 months because of all my complications, right?
Right.
So I went back to work, and I remember I was talking to the other Rob, Dad Rob, my weight is history, Rob. And we were talking, and he was like, hey, how's it been since you've been back at work? And I think this was, like, I don't even know if it was, like, my first day back at work. It was definitely my first week back at work. And I was driving home, and work was super stressful. Because, again, in the ER, you never know what you're walking into. And so it was, like, very busy. I left work. On my way to the highway, there's a Dunkin' Donuts that I always pass by. And I was, as I was passing, like, before I hit the Dunkin' Donuts, my brain was like, I want a donut. And I was like, oh, my God.
Yep.
For the past 3 months, I never once thought about wanting the donut. But the minute that I'm stuck in the same situation where I'm at work, mm-hmm. I have a stressful day, because that's what I would do before. I would go to work.
Yep.
I would leave work. I would pass by that Dunkin' Donuts, and I would buy, like, 2 or 3, like, Boston cream donuts or whatever they had. And I would eat that on my way to the gym, right? So then I told Rob, I'm like, oh, shit, like, this is so crazy. Like, boom, the minute that I'm stuck in the same stressful situation, I get the same trigger, right? So I was like, okay.
This our brain.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Like, 'cause you're conditioned to do that, right? So it's like,
yep,
that's the emotional response. So I'm like, oh, okay, I need to either I work on this on myself, or I do definitely have to go to a therapist for help. And I was able to do that work on my own. But it's like, you have to find something else. And what's funny is I'm at a new CrossFit gym, and their first class time is at 4:15. And my job is, like, almost an hour away. So it's like, for me to get there on time, I don't have time to make any stops. So that's kind of like, that's my thing where I'm like, no, like, I'm dedicated. I want to take that class. I don't want to waste time, because that's what I would do. I would go make stops, eat things, and then I would take a class later in the afternoon. But that's my way of, like, stop, like, another safeguard of stopping myself from, like, putting myself in a situation, because it's like, if I know that my job is stressful and that it'll trigger me, I need to have healthy snacks with me. I need to have better options. So, like, I come to work prepared. I have, like, so many things that I put in the fridge. I even have, like, I think the brand is called Drizzlicious. It's like these little mini rice cakes that have different flavors. Like, and I have the s'mores one. It just has, like, a little bit of chocolate, but the macros are actually very good. So it's like, okay, I have that with me, and I have it portioned out. So if I have a stressful day at work and I feel like I need something to help me get through that time, that's what I turn to, right? So I have this portioned out snack that I enjoy, right? Because if you eat something that tastes crappy, like, you're just going to still want the other thing, right? But if you eat something that you still enjoy, that you're still satisfying that craving, and then you move on from the craving, right? But if you're not, and I think this is something that Rob actually said on his podcast, if you fail to prepare, prepare to fail, right?
Yes,
so if you don't prepare yourself, then you're putting yourself in a situation where you might fail yourself because you didn't have the tools with you that you needed. So it's like, I always tell people, I'm like, find those smart swaps for things that you used to enjoy. Have them with you, whether it's a protein shake, a protein bar, like a cookie or something that has like better macros. Like have something with you.
So have jerky on you.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Something. So when shit hits the fan, you have that thing that you can use to satisfy that craving, and then you can move on from that craving. Because I tried avoiding it, right? But then the craving would just get stronger and stronger and stronger. So I've gotten to the point where I'm like, okay, I just need to find something that's better for my body that I can have when I have a craving, and then I can move on from that craving and like continue on my day and not like perseverate like, oh my God, like I just want some chocolate. I just want some chocolate. Like, okay, I have this Lily's sugar-free chocolate that's better for
me. There you go.
And boom, that's what I do.
Lily's is great option, guys. I do love the Lily's. And I've learned through talking to dietitians and surgeons, there, if you get that sweet tooth at night, there's a couple things happening. One, you didn't get enough protein throughout the day. And then the second thing is that you might have conditioned yourself, which I know I have, around 8:30, 9 o'clock at night, every night, where I would eat something. And so now my brain thinks I need to eat something at that time because I've done it for so long. So you have to fight the time frame sometimes. Or I'm from therapists, they've told me like you might have had a trauma that happened at night. And then you went and you soothed yourself with food, and you did that so many times that now nighttime is a soothing situation for you.
Yeah.
So our mind and body are so connected, and it remembers. Mm-hmm. It remembers things that we don't realize it's remembering. So it's insane, but it's amazing. And we do have to wrap up. So Anna, tell people, what would be the one thing that you would want to tell yourself 2 years ago? What's that thing that you would want to know?
Oof, that's hard because there's so many things. But I would just tell myself, like, you can do this. Take this one step at a time. And I'm saying this because when I did that 8 mile run on Sunday, and I was just, I just felt exhausted. My knee was swollen. Like, I was in pain. I was on mile 2, and I literally already wanted to stop. And I'm like, oh my God, how am I going to get through 6 more miles of this? And I'm like, you know what? You can slow down, but you can't stop. Right? So it's like the same thing. It's like no matter how hard it gets, things will eventually get easier. And this is something that I actually told my dad when he was hospitalized. And I'm like, you've already hit rock bottom. You can only get up from here. Right?
Yep.
So it's like if you've already hit your lowest, you have no chance but to do better now. So I would just tell myself, like, no matter what, just keep going. Like, things will always get better. No matter how dark things feel right now, there's always a light. You just didn't get there yet. You didn't get to the end of the light yet.
Yeah, and I want to piggyback on that. She is not wrong. I've been through a lot of dark days during these past 10 years, and you just can't stop. That's the deal. Don't ever give up on yourself, and it's okay to start a million times, because that means that you're trying, you're not giving up, you're going to keep doing this until you get it to where you want it to be. And there's nothing wrong with that. There is, like, we build these arbitrary rules and timelines for ourselves. And it's like, guys, we have our whole life to get this under control. Yes, life is too short and, you know, wild things happen, but like, you got to be able to live and be comfortable with what you're doing, and being comfortable in your skin is really important. So just know, like, we're always here for you. You can DM us at any point. You can email us. We're going to answer all your questions. I don't like to have a paywall for information. I think that's like stupidest thing ever. Education is education. And as much as I know it's really helped me with having depression and anxiety and me having those dark days, this is what has helped me, the community and talking to people like Anna, because like hearing their stories like inspire me again. So I just want to thank you for being so vulnerable, Anna, and telling us all the crazy stuff that you've been through and all the things you've accomplished. And I can't wait to see you at RVT in June, guys. We're going to be there together. We had a talk offline and she talked me back into it because I was getting a little nervous. So I am just glad that I have her and you guys. So like always, make sure you are taking your vitamins, getting your protein, getting that water in and getting that sleep, and use that ProCare code of OSLP. And lastly, don't be an asshole to one another. Have a great week, guys. Bye.